This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello and welcome to the Scene to Scene podcast. I am your host, Valerie Complex, associate editor and film writer at Deadline.com. On today's episode, we're talking to actress Mackenzie Lansing, who currently stars as Coral, District 4 tribute in the latest Hunger Games Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes film. The film takes place years before Coralania Snow, who's played by Tom Blythe, became the tyrannical president of Panem. The 18-year-old is the last hope of his fading lineage, a once proud family that has fallen from grace in a post-war capital. With the 10th annual Hunger Games fast approaching, the young Snow is alarmed when he is assigned to mentor Lucy Greybeard, played by Rachel Zegler, the girl tribute from the impoverished District 12, the same district that gave birth to the legendary Katniss Everdeen in this universe. The film also stars Hunter Schafer, who plays Tigress, which, if you've watched all the Hunger Games films so far, you'll know Tigress plays a big role in The Mockingjay. Lansing is a French-American actress and writer based in New York and L.A. She grew up in France and the Democratic Republic of Congo before moving to the U.S. to pursue acting. She started her career in television. She starred in shows like Red Oaks, Tell Me a Story, and The Deuce, and she gained notoriety for her role as Brianna on the award-winning show Mayor of Easttown, which stars Kate Winslet. Now, Lansing has been in three films, two that have already released and one set to release later. She was in The Creator, which was directed by Gareth Edwards, and she starred alongside John David Washington. And of course, she's in The Hunger Games Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. And she's in another film called All's Well in New York that stars Elizabeth Rodriguez and Bobby Cannavale. When I first met Lansing, she was working on Mayor of Easttown. And I've gotten an opportunity to watch her continue to build a strong body of work for herself. She's one of the hardest working people I know in Hollywood. And today we're going to be talking about her career. And we're going to be talking about the things that she went through during the SAG strike and what the audition was like for The Hunger Games at home. If you've seen The Hunger Games, you know it's an extremely physical role. So we talk about what that was like and doing that from home. And with that said, let's get into the discussion.
Imagine it was your name that they pulled.
Strange things do happen here.
I just want to know that somebody still cared about me. That I was still of value.
Welcome to the Capitol.
You look like you shouldn't be here.
I shouldn't, but I'm your mentor.
A rebel.
I am gonna get you out of here.
You want to protect people, and it's essential to accept what human beings are.
Thank you, Mackenzie Lansing, for coming onto the Scene to Scene podcast. I've been trying to get you on here for a little bit, but I think, you know, some things just come together when they're meant to, and I think this is the perfect time to have you on board. So what's up? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited to be here after, you know, post-strike and all that.
It's, like, I know during Pride, we talked about, like, the strike, and you talked about wanting to be able to promote for, The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songs and Snakes. That was like your big thing. And then you went to the premiere in London. So can you talk about how that was?
I mean, that was pretty incredible because I hadn't seen a lot of those people in months, you know, and we spent such an important time together on set. It was pretty incredible. Most people had seen the movie in like screenings and stuff. And this was actually my first time seeing it. So that was pretty wild.
Do you not like to watch yourself?
Do I not like to watch myself? No, I think I'm used to it now. I don't care that much.
Okay.
I think it like it's weird, and I never get over the fact that it's weird, but I try not to like beat myself up because it is what it is, you know. Once the movie goes to editing, it's out of my hands.
Right. And so I'm curious to know how did a role like this come across your desk? Where they were like, look, we're looking for somebody for the new Hunger Games movie. You should go audition. And like, what is that audition process like? Do you have to like run around with a pitchfork or something like that? Like,
So what's interesting is I actually didn't know what I was auditioning for, because I have kind of this like rule around auditioning where I try not to look what it's for. Cause my point of view is like how hard I work on it should be the same. If I'm agreeing to audition for you, it should be the same no matter what it's for. And unless I really don't understand the tone, I try not to get bogged down in like what it is. And also the project had a code name, right? So I had no idea what I was reading for. And then when I booked it, my manager called me and he was like, you booked it. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I booked this movie and then he was like, aren't you excited? You're going to be in Hunger Games. And I was like, say what now?
Oh, shit. Oh, so wow.
I had no idea. You know, the code name of the project was Butterfly. So I thought I was auditioning for a movie called Butterfly. And yeah, in the audition, it was a lot of like moving around, like not as much talking. So I had to figure out how to, you know, do that in my bedroom over Zoom and make it translate properly to the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy where you're just like not sure what you're walking into, and then you're walking into the Hunger Games. That's crazy.
Yeah. It was really weird.
did they like fly you guys around and like you have like not only just like voice like rehearsals, but like physical rehearsals in the space as well?
Yeah, so we actually got to Germany, me and the other tributes, like a month before we actually started shooting. And we would do fight training, stunt training every day, like 9 to 5 for like 3 to 4 weeks, in preparation for, you know, the big, you know, battle scene.
Wow. All right. Like, what was it? What does it feel like to like walk into that space, like those kinds of sets? Like, I feel like the Hunger Games has always been elaborate with costumes and sets and stuff and having these like sort of sprawling atmospheres. What was that like?
Yeah, it was, it's definitely the biggest scale project I've ever done. And there's so much thought and meticulousness put into every single detail of the costumes and the sets. And so there were times where, you know, for instance, at one point we shot with a drone. So, you know, when that happens, it's like, there's no crew on set. Wow. You feel like you're actually in it. And moments like that were really surreal as an actor. Cause you know, half the time you're shooting a scene and you have like a boom inches from your face or a bounce board next to you, you know, but like moments like that where there was just nothing to take you out of it was really crazy.
Interesting. I didn't even think about it that way, where drones would make it so that there's no cameras or anything. You're just playing around in a space with these things that are kind of just flying around you. And so speaking of which, what was it like to work with Francis Lawrence? He's really had an interesting trajectory where he's come from music videos, and then he's done several films and has gone on to direct the billion-dollar franchise. What was that like?
I think he is very good at balancing all these different elements that I've seen in different directors, but like brought into one person, you know, organization, has a vision, but is also flexible and interested in ideas and gets excited like a little kid on set. If there's like, if you bring in a new idea and it's good, all of those things, I think, make a really good leader. That, and he works with the same people over and over again. So when you walk onto you know, set, you're entering a family. And with that, there's this sense like that you're welcome, but also of responsibility, because you're walking into something that's already been created where there's already these bonds. So yeah, he's a really incredible director and just like very nurturing and specific and good at adjusting how he talks to each actor, I think, based on them and how he thinks he's going to get the best thing out of them.
And so how do you, you've been in so many different things. Mayor of Easttown and some of the other things that you've done have really differed. How do you jump in and out of these personas? Is that, I know some people go the method route and they're like stuck with these characters, and I'm sure that's probably not your beat, but you know, how do you get in and out of all these different type of characters that you juggle?
I think that it's like two parts, one part work, one part intuition. Like you do all the work so that when you're on set, you can kind of follow your intuition. But it does take a lot of like homework and research because you have to buy whatever circumstance you're in. You know, whether I'm like a bully on Mayor of Easttown or like a, you know, a biohazard digger on The Creator, like I just was, or, you know, a tribute from District 4 in The Hunger Games, the more separate from reality your circumstances are, the more work you want to do so that you relate to it as if it was your reality.
And yeah, let's talk about The Creator, because I did see it. I did like it. I've talked to John David Washington about it, and he is a huge fan of it. I think the director did a lot with so little, not so little, because $100 million budget is not little, but compared to like, you know, yeah, blockbusters work today and everything being $200 million or more, he really did a lot with it. And, you know, as soon as the film comes on, your character is there getting scared of like this AI thing coming to life. What was the experience like with that and sort of working with John David Washington, even if the scene is like 5 minutes long? He's such a cool guy.
So yeah, I originally had like two more scenes, but they were cut from the movie, which I figured was going to happen because it's so, you know, there were so many other more important moments in the story that needed to be kept. But so I spent more than just like a day on set with him. I spent like, you know, a few weeks out there. And John David is probably one of the nicest people in Hollywood I've ever met. He's also just very humble and dedicated to his craft. And those are really pleasant things to be around. And he's so interested in learning about anyone, but also so willing to like give help and advice. But yeah, that set was wild. You know, the suit that they had me in, it had like six layers, and it was like it's a real like biohazard, or it's not real, doesn't work, but you know what I mean? It's made as if it was real. So to stand up, three people put me to feet. It was extremely heavy. We were working in like 90 degree weather. All this being said, it was one of the best experiences of my entire life. And those kind of like physical challenges, I think, just added to, you know, the intensity of the scene when the, you know, robot comes to life or whatever.
Right. And is there any, because you've done different genres too, is there any genre that you're thinking about, wow, I want to explore sort of this genre?
You know, I feel like I just sort of float around, and every time I kind of am like, oh, this would be nice, it seems to happen. You know, around Mayor of Easttown, I was like, I really want to work with Kate Winslet someday. And, you know, that happened. And then I do love sci-fi. And then I booked The Creator. And then I was like, it'd be cool to be in something with a lot of action. And then I booked Hunger Games. So I'm not really sure what I want to do next. But I will say that Hunger Games pushed me to realize that I am capable of way more physically than I thought I was. Mm-hmm. And so part of me is really excited about that possibility, about doing work with more stunts, because I've done a lot of, you know, very serious dramatic work, and I love that. But I think I'd like something, you know, that combines a bit of both, like a very dense storyline, like The Hunger Games, the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, but also maybe that has that is action-packed.
We When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Like, I know we're talking about, like, you know, films and stuff, but what made you want to be an actress to begin with? Like, you know, you grew up in France and, you know, how does one say one day, you know, I think this is what I'm going to pursue, and then also like work to pursue it? Because we can say a lot of different things, but that doesn't make it so, you know what I mean?
A lot of delusion. No, wow. I mean, and hard work, but like, I think that I'm not really sure. Sometimes I look back on it and I'm like, what a insane thing to do, to be like sitting in a small town in France and be like, you know what I'm going to do one day? Like, with nobody in the industry, no connections whatsoever, just be like, I'm going to make this happen. I'm not really sure why I became an actor. I think that I mean, I've said this before, but I like to think that I don't think anybody comes to acting for the right reasons, because I don't think when you start out that you actually know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're always coming to, and this is true for a lot of other things that aren't just acting, you know, you want the popular girl to notice you, or maybe you're shy and it's a way for you to speak up, or maybe you just needed something to do on a Wednesday afternoon. You know, I don't know, but I don't think a lot of people get into acting for the right reasons, but you end up staying in it. I don't know, because I think it's the opportunity to live so many lives in one life, you know? That's what gets me about it anyway, is to leave every role feeling like I'm a little bit more expanded.
Mm-hmm. And how, and you've definitely sort of built your career from the ground up. And how does one, because I always figured like with acting, I'm like, there has to be some kind of mental illness going on. Not like for everybody, but when you talk about like delusion, there is really something there that is like made up, that you make up in your head to continue to be determined, and to keep up with the sort of craft. And how do you keep, you know, how do you keep sharp? How do you keep your talents like, as you know, as sharp is like the best word that I can think of, because when you're ready to go into a role, it's like, you know, either you got it or you don't. And I think you do teach class, acting class.
Yeah, I do. That's why, if I ever sound a little preachy,
no, not at all.
I'm also an audition coach. Yeah, I think that I had a lot of really great mentors: Shirley Shalit, Stephen Adley Gerges, and, you know, Charlie Sandlin, and a lot of people who really taught me that, like, as much as you need to stay healthy and protect yourself, like, if you really love this, it should consume you. And that means sacrifice. And that means showing up for it like any other artist does for any other practice. Like, a pianist will play piano every day. So I, even when I was like working multiple day jobs, I would set a time on Wednesday was my day off. And I'd tell people that I couldn't work. And on Wednesday, I would set up like my, you know, I would set up in my room and I would work on a monologue, and I'd be like, this is my audition time. And if I didn't get an audition, I would find an audition to practice.
Wow.
Because in my mind, it was like, if I'm doing this because I love it, I shouldn't need someone to tell me, to give me permission to do it. Mm-hmm. So I did that every single week. And also in a way to manifest, because it's like, if I hold Wednesdays open because I'm going, okay, I'm going to have an audition this day, in the long run, I ended up having auditions most Wednesdays, which was weird. But it started out with me just like sitting with a monologue in my bedroom.
And speaking of which, how did with someone like yourself, who's, you know, sort of in tune with your craft, how did the strike sort of affect your sort of momentum and your movement, so to speak?
I'm going to be really honest. The strike was, and look, I didn't, you know, this is not even to mention how hard it's been on everyone who's in crew. Like, people have it way worse than me, but I will say that that's it was one of the darker parts because but it was challenging in a good way because it got me back to the Wednesday afternoon thing. Cause there was a lot of me being, you know, sad about not being able to work. And, you know, I actually really enjoyed the business of acting. So not even being able to wheel and deal, you know, like make plans to meet up with people and stuff and talk about business stuff, like that made me really sad. But I kind of had to check myself and go back to like the basics and be like, well, you know, if you love it, then you do it. And it doesn't matter that you can't do it in front of an audience right now. You keep up anyway. But it was super challenging. I think more so than the pandemic even was for me.
That's really interesting. Yeah, because the pandemic sort of changed how people did things. It changed the way auditions worked and it changed on set dynamics. But the strike is just like, ain't shit going on. Nothing's happening.
Yeah. Like the pandemic, you could still like write and do things. And like, I think I did a Zoom reading during the pandemic and I wrote a play and like, you were allowed to do things. It was more difficult to do things, but you could find a way if you really wanted to, but this literally not being allowed to, that made it hard. But I did a couple, readings. My friend, Jan Rosenberg, they're an amazing playwright and I got to do one of their plays and that I think revived me enough to get me to the end of the strike.
Oh, okay. So then that, you know, it's good that you found an outlet, a way to sort of get you through it, because I know a lot of people were struggling and some of the stories I was hearing were crazy. Like
what?
I wrote an article a while ago and it was just people just not being paid. Really just people going years without receiving the residuals they were owed. And I mean, I could send you the link to that. It's just, you know, or, you know, things not being as transparent as they should be. Mm-hmm. Like you said, a lot of people get into this industry and they don't know how things work and they don't find out until they're not getting paid until, you know, they find out how things work. And so it was just really sort of difficult, or, you know, finding out about AI stuff. And that was the other question I was going to ask you is, you know, with all the talk about AI and the things going on, like today they just announced Edith Piaf, they have a new movie coming out where they're using her voice and likeness via AI.
Oh my God.
For a 90-minute film. And, you know, that's something that's an issue of contention. And in the scheme of things, especially with post-strike. So how do you feel about that? Let me see if I can send you this article.
I definitely think that that was like the more important part of the strike. And I'm still curious to see. I wasn't able to make it to like the town hall Zoom meeting that was held with SAG, but I'm going to like review the points before I vote. Because I do think that the AI component of this is probably the most important thing that we're fighting for. And it does scare me, not because I'm opposed to AI altogether, but just like, you know, like I don't know, would Edith Piaf have consented to, you know, if she was still alive? Like, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to send you, I'm going to email you this article so you can see it. It's like, no joke. It's like, yeah, they're making a whole new biopic where AI will recreate her voice and image. I can't imagine. I would be horrified, you know, as someone who's, you know, if I had another life and I could just see a mirror image of people just creating this computer image of what they think I might be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And also just the way it affects your choices as an actor, you know, like, yeah, I just hope that there's a lot of protection around it. You know, I'm not against using it altogether. I just hope that it's used with caution and with consent.
That's extremely important, because without that, what kind of industry, you know, remains when you have, you know, studios having that kind of power? So what was, going back to the Hunger Games, what was it like working with Rachel Zegler? And there's a lot of powerful people in this cast. I met Hunter Schafer last night, who seems like a very sweet lady. She's extremely tall. Like, I'm only 5 feet.
Yeah, she's very tall. She's so nice.
What was it like to work with all these people? And I'm assuming you must have been close with the other tributes because you guys were together all the time and sort of filming and stuff like that.
Yeah, the tributes, we were really close. Like, I think that even, you know, Francis and some of the other people on set were like, they were just astonished by how tight we all got. But because of that month that we had before filming that we spent together, it just brought us really close together. And, you know, for me, like, I wasn't able to, you know, go back to the US. So I stayed there for the full 5 months. So, you know, which was really cool, actually. It, you know, it was kind of like being at sleepaway camp, like all in the same hotel and everything. So we formed really tight bonds, and Rachel joined us like shortly after she finished Snow White. And, you know, it was at first, I think everybody was nervous because we'd been already working on like some of the fight choreography for a month and we hadn't met her yet. And like, she was just so absolutely lovely and really got to know everybody in a personal way. Her and I became very tight. I think Rachel is an incredible person. And yeah, I don't really, yeah, Josh Rivera, also such a nice guy, such a talent. Tom too. And yeah, Hunter is just like the nicest person. She's so funny too.
I really like Rachel Zegler, the work that she's chosen and how she really stands on principle. Like, at the fan event last night, she really talked about, you know, some differences between her character and Katniss Everdeen and just, you know, women sort of doing their thing. And I just thought that that was so admirable, especially when people don't want to hear women's opinions these days. So.
Yeah, she's an incredibly strong person. And yeah, I stan Rachel Zegler for sure.
So what do you got? What are you working on that's coming up? Can you let me know any projects that you have in the works right now that people can be on the lookout for?
Oh, yeah. I was about to say not much because of the strike, but that's not true. Yeah, so the creator, I think, just left theaters. But I'm in a movie called, one of the leads in a movie called All's Well in New York, which should be having a theatrical release soon. It has Liza Colon-Zayas from The Bear, for a very long time, actually. Elizabeth Rodriguez, who's been in everything, you know, but probably most famous for Orange is the New Black. And this is kind of her baby. She co-wrote it with Ben Snyder. It also has Bobby Cannavale in it, Max Casella, Michael Rispoli. So a whole bunch of actors who've been friends for a very long time and know each other through Labyrinth Theater. And I was lucky enough to come along board with all these really talented people. And it's kind of different from all the other stuff. It's interesting what you were talking about earlier, Val, like the different roles. This is different too. I play like a, I don't want to spoil anything, but yeah, I play like a pregnant 20 something. That's in the trailer, so I'm not spoiling any of
You're
that.
You're pregnant in this movie? Oh,
I am pregnant in this movie.
Are you pregnant? Oh my goodness. This is really going to be something you really, you know, I think when I look back at some of the things you've been a part of, I think you choose really smart roles. I think you know your strengths and you really play up to those. I'm a big fan.
Thank you. I'd like to take credit for it, but I think I've just, in terms of how eclectic the projects have been and how well most of them have done, I think I've just been incredibly lucky. I'd like to say that I turned down 20 roles and handpicked them, but that would be like,
yeah.
But yeah, I've been very
thank
fortunate.
Thank you so much, Mackenzie, for coming on the Scene to Scene podcast and just bearing with me and all my questions that I had, because like I just saw The Hunger Games last night, so it was so fresh in my mind, you know, that I had like all of these like crazy questions. I was a big fan of the books before, you know, this little 30 something walking around with Hunger Games t-shirt on.
That's amazing. It's
quite fun, but thank you so much for chatting with me. And you know, I wish you the best in your career and looking forward to hearing more about other projects you got going on.
Absolutely. I can't wait to be back.
All right. Take care.